Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and Nick Dinsmore, a.k.a. Eugene, is making his Talk is Jericho debut. I met up with Nick Dinsmore in South Dakota last year. He runs his own school and wrestling promotion in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, called Midwest All Pro Wrestling. You'll hear all about how that got started. We mostly talk about how he got involved in wrestling. He got signed to OVW with Danny Davis and Jim Cornette, my old buddy. Nick was there when Randy Orton, John Cena, Dave Batista, even Brock Lesnar first started. He talks about working with them in their early days and what they were like. He also has some stories about Jimmy Cornette, who was writing and producing OVW TV at the time. Nick was at OVW for years before he finally got called up to WWE after pitching Vince McMahon the Eugene character. Nick's telling the story of how that happened and what originally inspired the idea of the character of Eugene. He's also talking about his run at WWE where he traveled with William Regal. He was the GM of Raw, even. He pinned Vince McMahon, had a great WrestleMania moment at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. You'll hear all those stories and what ultimately ended Eugene's run at the WWE. Nick also spent a couple years as a WWE coach before starting up his own school and promotion in Sioux Falls. So here we go. Nick Dinsmore and the story of Eugene starting now on Talk is Jericho. So one of the cool things about being back on the road is you get to see different people when you come to different places. And this is the first time I've seen Nick Dinsmore in maybe 10 years, maybe.
I was thinking earlier, I can't remember when the last time was. Probably, I didn't see you when I was a coach, did I?
I don't think so. It's been a while.
Yeah.
But we're in South Dakota, which is a very random place for you to be. But it's amazing that you're here again. And it's funny because when I walked into the venue, I saw a guy who said, yeah, Nick Dinsmore was my coach. So you have a school here, training here. Tell us kind of how you ended up in South Dakota and what's been going on.
Yeah, so wife and I moved here in 2015. She's from here. And I always knew, like, I wanted to start a pro wrestling company in a territory, much like Danny Davis had in Louisville with OVW. So we moved here. We started it up. I've got 27 students right now.
Wow.
But I've had, over the past nearly 5 years, I've had a lot more that, you know, have moved away or whatnot.
Mm-hmm. So is it kind of a – that's a lot of students for being in such a remote area. Like you said, there's not a lot of people in Sioux Falls.
Sioux Falls has 180,000 right. people in the city, 250,000 people in the metropolitan area. Was it 400,000 people in the state? 700,000. I think they got more cows
than people. But I guess it's kind of like you're emulating where you spent so much of your time was Louisville, which was mm-hmm. kind of a smaller area too. Mm-hmm. But people would come from all over the country to be a part of the school. Is it kind of the same thing that you have going on here?
Well, the one advantage we have here is they didn't have any independent wrestling Vern ran here back in the day, but they had no independent wrestling here at all. And so when I started up, we got all the wrestling fans that would go to an independent wrestling show started coming to our shows. So we've been really well received.
So where are we kind of like geographically? What other cities are near here?
So Fargo is about 3.5 hours north.
Oh, okay.
Sioux City, Iowa is about an hour south. And then farther south is Omaha.
So it's kind of a Midwestern area.
Definitely.
Very, very close. So, and you said you wanted to start your own company. Do you run shows as well?
Yeah. In November, we'll be 5 years. We've run monthly, at least monthly, those 5 years. There were some months where we were picking up 2 and 3 shows, and it kind of slows down in September when kids go back to school and picks back up in January. And I'm starting to see the ebbs and flows of you know, how the fans come.
What's the name of your company?
Midwest All Pro Wrestling.
All right, brother. Who'd you ever beat is the shirt you're wearing. It's great. So tell me, what did you learn kind of from Danny Davis in Louisville that you kind of apply to running your own place?
Probably the first thing is thriftfulness.
Budget-wise?
Yes. Yeah. I generally get the most out of advertising and the best I can for the least amount possible. But I've got a lot of students, and they'll go out and paper the town, and they sell tickets as well. And I've just, when I first started, I didn't have anybody, so I had to call guys in Omaha to come up. But as I progressively got more and more students, first show I had Mike Hayes from Louisville. Do you know what I'm talking about? He was in the Army.
I don't know. Okay. I mean, I know Michael Hayes.
Yeah. No, not PS, baby. No, not PS. Second show, Carlito and Shayna Baszler were on. Shayna Baszler's from here.
Yeah. Oh, she's from here.
Yeah. Her dad has like a front row seat every time he comes to all the shows.
Yeah, I know she's from South Dakota. I forgot that. Yeah.
So like the second show, the first show, I got my first 2 students, trained them for 2 months, and second show they had their first match. And we did like a video thing. I lifted from the Desire videos, and we made our own little video about these two following their dreams. From that, I got 6 students. So it's just progressively, you know, gotten more. And now I don't have to use any outside talent. I've got enough guys on my own to.
To build up your own stars and that sort of thing. So, because you said 5 years, so were you working with WWE up until you came out here?
I was a coach from 2012 or 13 to mid-2015.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when they went from FCW building to the Performance Center, yeah, I was a coach then.
One of the first coaches there.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little about that, because you were in Louisville in the WWE system for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where you're from, that area?
Yep. I'm from Louisville.
So how did you end up working in that territory in OVW?
Well, when I went to high school, I wanted to be a pro wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
At the homecoming night, or not the night, but it was like an afternoon thing at school, and they were just announcing this so-and-so, and oh, Nick Dinsmore, he wants to be a pro wrestling star. A girl that was a year younger than me comes up to me and says, my dad's got a wrestling school here. And that was Nightmare Danny Davis's daughter.
Hmm.
And so when I was 18, I went and watched it. I was like, oh, I'm so excited. And then I got injured playing football, so I had to rehab that. But then I started when I was just 19. Just working in Louisville, training with Danny for about 3 years. I started in 96. I think in 98 is when the first guy, Rico, came to OVW. And at that time, none of us made any money, but they were starting to bring in the stars and whatnot. And then the end of 2019, I got offered the developmental deal.
99. Let me ask you this, though. So you mentioned Rico came in. Was he already under a contract, like in a WWE thing?
Yeah.
So they brought him in and sent him down to OVW prior to OVW being a WWE territory?
Well, I don't know the exact time that announced it, but yeah, I think he came in 98.
So you guys were already working down there when WWE kind of made it its official.
I've been wrestling there for 3 years, and Danny had the school for, I don't know, probably 7 or 8. And then Cornette wanted to move back to Louisville, and so he got with Danny and said, hey, let's turn it into a developmental system here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they had one somewhat in Puerto Rico at the time, and maybe in L.A. with Rick Bassman, and then...
It's so amazing to think of how important the developmental territories are now with NXT, you know, all around the world. And back then, they didn't even have anything.
Yeah.
You know? So when they first started coming in there, how did you guys hear about it? They start sending, like, was it Cornette who took over the territory?
No, Danny still ran it, but then Cornette started coming in. He started writing our TV. So all the guy he was then positioning the hometown guys, the stars, to put them in place how he wanted them. And then he started to slowly bring in people. And, you know, every week somebody new would show up. And mm-hmm. in the first year, it was Batista, Cena, Randy Orton, Victoria, Brock.
These are big time players that came through the system.
And then there was probably another 10 that fizzled out. There was a guy that was like 7'2", big Russ McCullough.
I remember
didn't
him.
Work
yeah.
out.
Waterman?
Waterman, yeah, he was good.
Ron Waterman. Yeah, there's a lot of those types of guys. But there was the four kind of foundations that were there was you, Doug Basham. Danny Basham.
Danny and Conway, Rob Conway.
Rob Conway, but Damage was Danny,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And so, but I remember thinking, because I was down there a few times, and you guys were down there, and they would never bring you up.
Yeah.
You were just there over and over and over again, and you were all really good. But as you know, once you get to a certain level, you're just going to stay at that level when you're working mm-hmm. with guys. So what was the, why were you guys never brought up? Were you ever told? What was the story of why you were down there for so long?
It was weird because like Conway and I are very similar. We were just happy to be there.
Right.
You know, we didn't think we would get signed. And so they were using us as test dummies or to work with the developmental talent in the ring. And then they were featuring those guys and bringing them up. And I don't really know, but I could feel like Danny and Cornette probably pushed to get us jobs. And it was just kind of like, okay, because it was much less than all the other guys were making.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but and then they were scouting the talent that they want. And we were just going to be part of the training for them, I assume. And then after a while, I was still around, and then I had a meeting with Vince one day about doing something, and I just blurted out, well, I got a character that is kind of crazy, that doesn't know how to tie his shoes, but, you know, when he gets in the ring, he's like Idiot Savant. All right, we'll start on Monday.
Well, before we get to that, let's talk more about having some of these guys down there. Like, were you working with Cena and Brock and Randy and Batista?
Yeah, absolutely.
So when they came in, tell us about, like, who was really good right off the bat, who needed some polishing, and who did you think was going to be the star out of those guys?
Randy was good off the bat, and I think he had just a little bit of training, but of course he'd been around it his whole life.
Right.
He was showing me stuff.
Yeah.
All right, cool. And then Brock was good, but he was big, and he was having just a transition to more pro wrestling style. Shelton was spot on from the minute he came there. He was one of the first ones, too. Victoria and Cena were both limited because they both came from L.A. And, I think they only showed them rolls, bumps, some minor moves, you know, so they had a long way to progress. And then Batista, he kept getting injured down there. I'm not sure, but I think they felt like his job might be in jeopardy because he kept getting injured, but then just took off.
You stuck him in the river. He was the Leviathan that came out of the
It was good.
The Tennessee
that
River.
Was the best thing.
And because Cena was very, like, it took him a while to get over on the main roster until he started doing the rapper thing. So right off, like, out of the gate, he wasn't earmarked to be the guy, much the same way that, like, maybe Randy was because of his lineage, right?
Yeah, Cena told me before, like, the first day he walked into OVW and he saw all the guys that were much bigger, and, you know, he was muscular, but they were just a little bit bigger. He didn't think he was going to make it. He goes, I'm going to wash out of here, you know? And then for a while, he was rigid in the ring, and finally, when we got him to relax and start having fun, then he'd go out there and play. But then I think when he went up to the main roster, he felt he had to be a certain thing,
right,
or something. And then finally, when he relaxed and just had fun, then it was to the races.
And you can see that, right?
Yeah.
All right, we're talking about OVW and how the guys used to do big shows at Six Flags in Louisville all the time.
We did a couple shows at the Louisville Gardens before they shut it down, and then they got to deal with Six Flags. It was like 5 or 6 shows over the summer, and if you got the season pass, you know, your shows are included. Mm-hmm. So, and that was the big thing, and Cornette would always try to get somebody to come down, so...
I worked Johnny Jeter there one time. Yeah. That's another guy who kind of just didn't go anywhere when he had the steam. So what was it like working for Jimmy? Because Jimmy wrote all of that TV very meticulously. Mm-hmm. I worked for him, you know, and know kind of the pros and cons of Cornette. Mm-hmm. How was it for you?
I enjoyed it, but he was writing for me. I was top guy all the time. You know, hometown boy, and he got me over in Louisville, you know, because people still think, you know, well, they think I'm, you know, great shooter and state champion and all that stuff. And it was lifted, and parts of it were true, but Cornette made me sound great, you know, and just got me over. Worked with me up real well. Like, I was still in college, and my last college credit, the only class offered was on Wednesday night, which is when TV was. So I said, you know, Jimmy, I can't make TV for a whole semester. God damn, brat. But then he came back the next, he goes, okay, it's perfect. This is what we're going to do. And he was right there.
I don't know. An injury angle or something?
No, I lost a match to Brian Christopher, and the stipulation was, if I lost, I was managed by Kenny Bolin. So Kenny Bolin wasn't going to put me on TV because he didn't like me. I was the baby face. So I would do videotapes, you know, like backstage things or whatever, at other times record, but I wasn't on TV for however long the semester was.
Would you ever witness any good Cornette freakouts?
Oh God, yes. They would always put Rob or myself or Doug or Danny Basham in the main event, because Danny taped TV taped it like it was live, and he didn't want to edit and didn't want to stop and whatnot. So one time Cornette tried Cena against Randy in the main event, and counting down 30 seconds, 20 seconds, 5, 4, they went over like 2 minutes and 17 seconds, right, something like that. And I remember Cena's coming back and doing his tape. It was a good match. He's like, yeah, we did real good in quarter. Goddamn, 217 or 2 minutes, 17 seconds. Gets his baseball bat and starts beating the windows in the building down from us, but it was an old building. Hitting his car. God, Randy was smart enough that he just left when he came back. But, every now and then it came out.
I saw that a couple times with the baseball bat and smashing in people's windows on their car. There was this guy he used to work for. His name was Casey. And he was like a Jimmy's assistant, and something went wrong, and he just went and he bashed out the windows of Casey's car as he's just standing there going, you know, you have to pay for that. I know I'm going to pay for it. You. The one time with Santino too, where were you there for that one?
No, I'd been called up by then, but he
punched Santino or something.
I was listening to Jimmy's podcast earlier, and I didn't realize this part of it. When he got up to yell, and he was going to yell, he said he shit his pants. He said that's really what upset him. And he was just over there. He got so mad.
How was it? So you mentioned Rob Conway. He was another guy that when he finally came up, he had a lot. He I always thought he did really good.
Yeah.
And was he one of your partners down there? Because was it you and him versus Doug and Damage, or was it you guys just all kind of all four working together?
Rob and I were partners for a long time. And then finally we did the big turn angle, but I think we had gotten back together when WWE came there. But yeah, it was a lot of us against Doug and Danny, and doing this whole thing. And finally, we have the match. The loser leaves town, and we beat them, and they're out. And then Cornette brought Kevin Kelly back the next week. We're going to give these guys developmental contracts, so now they're stationed here. Mm. They were right back in, so it was good.
Was there ever a time when you felt like, I know for a couple guys that have been in NXT for a while, they're like, you know, we don't know what else we can do, and we're starting to lose our, you know, love for the business. Did you ever have that kind of frustration in Louisville from not getting called up?
No, because I think in the back of my mind, I assumed I wouldn't be called up anyway.
Gotcha.
I thought I was just an OVW guy, and I was just hoping to have, you know, a long time under contract.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was seeing, you know, as time went on, and I kept getting better and kept getting better and getting in better shape. And then, you know, then when I finally totally relaxed and almost didn't care, that's when I just started doing funny stuff in class so everybody entertained everybody or at the shows. And it just kind of morphed into what Eugene became. Just,
well, let's talk about that character. So you mentioned you had this idea that you pitched to Vince. So what was the original concept for Eugene?
Well, Rip Rogers came to me. Mm. Nixon, I got an idea. You know, and he spelled out the whole thing. Rip's son has autism, so he's telling me, like, you know, he could count in Korean and do all this stuff on the computer, but he couldn't be very social when he was at school. So what about a character that can, you know, do every move, you know, spot on, but then when he goes to talk to somebody, okay. So I put it in the back of my mind. A couple months went by, and they sent down the agents, Arn or Fit or Dean, I don't remember who it was, and I pitched that character to them. Nah, WWE ain't going to do that. You know, that Mighty Igor Pusky stuff. You know, okay.
Is that what Mighty Igor was? That kind
yeah,
of
yeah, he was a similar childlike mind.
Gotcha.
Next month, the writers came down, pitched it to them. No, we'd never do that. So I guess I did get frustrated at one point, because then I told Doug Basham, I think I'm going to quit and try to go to Japan. But I had no. I wasn't going to do that. I mean, I was getting paid to live at home and be a star in my own territory. But I think Doug told maybe Dean. Dean told Johnny Ace. All of a sudden, next thing I'm sitting in a meeting with Vince. I want to get back to character-based wrestling. And I just spit out this character. And Stephanie was in the room. She's like, oh, yeah, they could do this and this. All of a sudden, Austin walks in. It was Saturday. It was in February. Saturday's main event, I think, where he came back.
Yeah, we're trying to rekindle that. Yeah.
Austin walks in, and Vince goes, "Have you ever seen him wrestle?" "No, I don't think so." I said, "Well, Danny Davis trained me, and I knew that Danny and Austin had a connection from Dallas." So then he just looked at me, looked at Vince, goes, "Oh, he's probably one of the best." Then, all right.
That was your. Just that's what they used to do: is send down writers every month to take your ideas for what you wanted to do. Or
there was two or three times that the writers came down.
Okay.
And towards the end of my time there, I think they were trying to send one down maybe more often.
Gotcha.
And I think the thing was, maybe not even to pitch ideas, but just the writers to get eyeballs on the guys they got down here.
Cause sure.
I guess they could see them on video, but they never really talked to them and couldn't meet them and, you know.
So when you pitched this idea to Vince, he said you're going to start on Monday. So how were you introduced as Eugene? And where did Eugene come from?
From Eugene in Pittsburgh.
Tell us about him.
Well, I met him with WWE, and he's a longtime fan, longtime nearly family member of the WWE universe. He would come to the shows. His father's name is Bucky, right?
Yeah, man.
Was Bucky a referee or just a friend?
I can't remember. I haven't thought of that guy for years. What a yeah. He was always in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he had autism or if he
had Down syndrome.
Down syndrome.
Eugene had Down syndrome.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. 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 So you took the name as a homage to Eugene?
Well, they gave it to me.
Oh, okay.
You know, and I heard that Vince contacted Bucky and said, "Hey, would you have a problem with that?" I don't know if that's true or not, but
I doubt it.
Moolah made a man out of Eugene.
Oh, wow! Really?
Yeah,
I haven't heard that story.
Oh, so yeah, like the first time I met him, Dreamer was in the locker room. "Hey, Eugene, what about Moolah?" And he goes, "Moolah." And like, the rumor is that she felt sorry for him, so she made a man out of him.
Okay. So you're Eugene.
Yep.
And what's your debut on TV? And what direction are you given to play this character?
I don't know. I don't think they thought I could really pull it off. Well, let me rewind. They brought me up to do it at a live event first. And I wrestled Lance Cade. And I think if I would have wrestled almost anybody else, it wouldn't have gotten over as well. But Lance knew exactly how to work with like a gimmick.
And was he down in OVW as well?
I think that's when he was called up as Garrison Cade.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because this was on the road, but it was like a Saturday during the Final Four or something. So it was like one of those afternoon shows.
Sure.
It's kind of sparse out there. And Eugene never been on TV, and by the end of the match, they're chanting my name, Eugene.
Really? So what did Lance do to get it over?
Just didn't beat me up, you know, picked on me, they slapped me around, made fun of me, you know, just a little bit different type heat that you would get Eugene, other than viciously pounding him, you know, and then fire up, and I don't know, something, he ended up beating me, and then my name at the end. Walk back through the curtain, Hunter, Stephanie, Fit, we're all standing ovation.
Wow.
And he said, what was the word that he said? He said, you committed to the character 100%.
Right.
You know, like the guys that go out there and are unsure, and you can just tell in their face. Yeah. I just went in there and did it.
No inhibitions whatsoever.
Yeah.
So your idea for the character was that he was like Rip's idea, like a savant?
Yeah, like an idiot savant.
Was he mentally handicapped? Was he just childlike?
He was special.
Gotcha.
That's all that was ever said, right?
Right.
Yeah, but it was just like there was only one kid's character, and it was Hurricane, and he was on SmackDown. So I knew that one brand didn't have a kid's character. And that was kind of post Austin, post NWO, everybody wanted to be a cool, strong heel. I said, I want to do the complete opposite. I want to be a sympathetic comedy babyface. Mm-hmm. And it was like just a slot that wasn't filled at the time.
Wow. What has never been filled, you know, as far as the way you played that character. Because like I said, I haven't said this yet, but you were really great at playing that character. Because it's a lost art in wrestling of actually playing a character. When I'm Chris Jericho, it's just me turned up to 100. Mm-hmm. And I'm good at it because it's me. But you're playing something that's completely opposite. You were acting that part, you know, like Dustin Hoffman in The Rain Man, or whatever it was. So you really did commit to it.
I just started to think, like, when I was a kid, what did I think about wrestling? You know, if it got excited, Eugene would clap the hands. If he got scared, he might, his palms get sweaty, you know, just how a kid would react, and just kind of pulled off that.
How did they debut you on TV?
Regal came back, and Bischoff was the general manager. Regal's in his office, and he goes, oh great, you know, I'm gonna bring you back, but I need you to look after my nephew Eugene. He's outside somewhere. Hey, Eugene's a special little boy. Okay. And Regal goes out and looking, then he finds me, and then he comes back and he's like, I can't manage this guy's a window licker, I can't, you know, doing all this stuff. And then I'd gone out to King and JR, and I put the headset on, and I was just talking, and Eugene ushered me out, and that was how they introduced me.
So right off the bat, I love that window licker. Like, so you could never say that in 2020. You could never do this character in 2020, I don't think. Do you?
I don't know. WWE always seems like that whatever the character is, that if they want to, they can pull it off and make it make sense. Mm-hmm, you know, they took the mask off of Kane and made it make sense.
You're right, yeah.
You know?
What was this, like 2004? 2004, yeah.
I mean, it was an underdog story of a boy finding his dreams, and, you know, had the WrestleMania moment with Hogan.
We'll talk about this in a second, but I love too, like the hair spiked up. You kind of the crazy hair going on, and you wore almost like a Ribera jacket or something. What were you wearing to the ring?
Somebody give me just like one of those old 80s warm up jackets.
Yeah.
And so I would wear that, and then but I go, oh, I'm gonna turn it inside out, you know, so inside out. So I put it inside out, but you really couldn't tell. It just looked like a white jacket. Mm-hmm. So Hunter had gone, well, put your name on the back of it, so that when you turn it inside out, then you can see it's backwards.
I
assume people got that it was a backwards jacket, other than a white one with my name backwards. But yeah, and then I just had. I didn't have any gear to wear, so I asked. Conway had a pair of trunks that he used to measure off of for seamstresses, and he just threw me those, and that was like that dark blue pair.
Yeah.
And I had my knee pads and my boots, and just, okay.
So who was some of your first feuds with?
Coach.
Coachman.
Yeah.
How did you guys do with that?
We had a big match. I can't remember what the pay-per-view was. Big, long, drawn-out, you know. That's when The Rock came back, when Coach yelled at me and told me to leave. Eugene, get out of here. Nobody wants to see you. And I go all the way back down, almost past the curtain, and I'm literally crying. Rock's music hits. He hadn't been on TV in 2 years. We were in San Diego. Nobody knew he was there. And it was like, the people pop, but I think they all almost thought, like, it's going to be a joke. So,
yeah.
And then he came to the curtain, and then it's like a big, huge one. And he get to the ring, and I think it was slated for 11 minutes or something.
Oh, he doesn't give a shit.
We were on 17 minutes. and he goes back and, Coach, what are we going to do? He goes, don't worry, it's good.
Yeah. That's the Raw. He taught me that. When it's good, it's good. When it's a money segment. Yeah. You got 11 minutes, Rock. Yeah, sure. Sure, I do. That's pretty crazy to think that you were that popular that you were associated with The Rock and associated with Hogan. Did kids really relate to this character?
I've gotten a lot of positive affirmation from family members of someone that might be special or have disabilities that, like, when they saw you, they said, you know what? I can do anything because Eugene could do it. Mm-hmm. I've gotten a lot more of those pat on the backs than people saying you shouldn't have done that. Mm. For the first couple weeks I was on TV, I wasn't wrestling. I was just went out one time and set off the pyro, and one time just got in the ring and ran. And the not me directly, but I think, you know, the perception of, oh, what are they going to do with this character? Mm-hmm. And then when I had my first match and I won – okay, now I see. Now it's the underdog story of a boy that's going to achieve.
Because in the ring, you did kind of, you had the, like, I don't know if it's savant's the right word, but you had that kind of intense freak out strength and all that sort of stuff, right?
Yeah, big time.
And that was the key to
it. Yeah, my initial thought was I wanted to do just all kind of crisp wrestling, you know, that not a lot of other guys do. But then that kind of morphed into, oh, Eugene was a fan of these guys, so do their moves.
He would do whatever.
Whatever it takes.
Yeah. I remember one time where you were the GM of Raw.
In Winnipeg. I just watched that segment the other day.
I want to talk about this.
You won the musical chairs.
What was the setup for that, though? Bischoff was out of town or something?
I don't know if they... I don't remember exactly how they said he was not there, but yeah, he was not there. So I got to be GM for a day, and I think I had six segments. Because four of them were in that bouncy house.
Yeah, you had a bouncy house as your office?
And yeah, we'd walk through it during the day. Let's try it again. Okay, and we'd taped the ones that were taped, and we did the ones live, but by the end I jumped so much my calves were cramping. And then I think I had to go out and referee a match at the end of the night also. I think so, but I loved it. I was, you know,
I'll never forget that week. So I'm from Winnipeg, obviously, and I was like, okay, so I think Benoit was the champion at the time. I'm like, we should do something like, you know, Jericho versus Benoit for the world title in Winnipeg, like what a story. And Gwartz calls me, he's like, well, I got some ideas. I'm like, what is it gonna be? And it's like, you're gonna be playing musical chairs. And I was like, what the are you talking about? Well, Eugene's gonna make you guys play music. And I was super pissed because I was expecting some kind of classic angle in my hometown, and I hadn't been back in the first time ever on TV in Winnipeg. But I'll tell you what, that segment ended up being great.
Yeah,
because just have some fun with it, and it was actually really cool. But when I was first pitched that, I was like, this sucks, I hate Eugene. As if you wrote it, right? But they would put a lot of spotlight on you. See, now that we're talking, I forgot just how much of a spotlight Eugene had on this character.
It was a refreshing character at the time. And I remember, and it was you that told me this, after I was on your in-ring show, the highlight reel, you said that the next week the ratings had gone up by X points, that it hadn't been that high in two years.
Wow.
And I was like, oh, wow, cool.
So people really responded to it, which is why you had so many TV spots and stuff. Tell us about your WrestleMania moment.
That's when WrestleMania 21 in L.A. at the Staples Center. Eugene just runs out to the ring and starts cutting a promo about how he loves WrestleMania and how he loves midgets, and King Kong Bundy wrestled against the midgets.
How did he talk again? I don't even know.
I don't know. I can't do it as well as he used to. I'm just, you know.
I'm not trying to get you to do it. I'm just like, I like wrestling or something like that.
But like, I never had that strong, deep voice, baby face.
Yeah.
And Danny Davis would always make fun of me. He's like, you talk like this. So I just took it, and I just, okay, now my character's just going to talk a little lighter, a little faster. I don't know exactly what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
But I was in the ring cutting the promo, and Muhammad Hassan and Daivari came down, and then they got upset and they beat up Eugene. The Camel clutched him, and then the Hulkster hit the ring, saved the day.
I remember that. And then you posed.
So I did pose, but I didn't pose then. They go, I remember Steve Kern comes up to me, he goes, what do you want to do before Hogan gets in? After they, like, Steve's coming, just roll to the floor and crawl back.
Crawl back?
Yeah. Just, you know, get out of camera and just be gone. You know,
really?
Exit. No problem. I can do that.
Yeah.
But then it was a couple months later, it was in Pittsburgh when Hogan came down and saved me from, I think, Angle. And then we got to do the pose. So I think people remember the pose and they remember the WrestleMania. And I let them think that it's kind of
combined the two, right? So with all this focus and you know, TV time and all this other stuff, how did the character end? How did Eugene's run end?
Non-compliance. Yeah.
Meaning?
I failed a drug test.
Oh, gotcha. Non-compliance contract.
Yeah, like I'd had a prescription a long time ago, and it was a prescription medicine. And when I went to get the prescription, the doctor killed himself. And Walgreens was like, you know, we don't keep records past a year.
Jeez.
So I had no
proof that you had the
documentation.
So that was it?
Yep.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you feel that it was coming? Like, were you still pretty hot on the show? Had you winded down a bit as Eugene?
Yeah, well, yeah, but this is before. It's Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did the 9 week vacation in Atlanta and came back, and then I was cooled down for a while, and then they started giving me a little bit more, and then they sent me to SmackDown. I was on SmackDown and just.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Did you feel that it, had that not happened, how you could have continued the character, or would you have to make some changes to it? Or
no, I think so. I think continue it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it'd been Eugene so long, difficult to come out of it, but.
I'm just wondering, like, what kind of different shades could you have put on it to keep it fresh?
I don't know. The only thing I could think was have him on for a little bit, take him off for a little bit, and just.
What I thought would have been a good one, now that we're talking, I remember I thought it would have been great when the time comes that you drop it and it's all just the ruse to turn heel. You know what I mean? Like, it's.
Vince didn't want to do that because he didn't want to compromise any gimmicks wrestlers going forward. Like, is this just a gimmick?
Interesting.
Thinking about it now, I would have proposed. Multiple personalities, and sometimes you can come out of one personality. You know, Eugene's a sweet guy, but this is what I am.
Right, right, right. Kind of what Matt Hardy's doing now with the different ideas and gimmicks. Did you talk a lot to Vince? Obviously, he took a real liking to this character.
I did a little bit. I probably didn't put my face in front of him enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would have liked to maybe gotten a little bit better relationship, but I was there half nervous. You know,
sure.
Showing up on time, doing what I'm told, but. Remember when he tore both of his quads in the Royal Rumble? So I had my knee injury, and I was in Birmingham doing therapy, and he was just had the surgery, so I just walked to his room, you know, and he's there, and he's got his legs propped up, and he's half not shaving. I can tell he's nervous. I say, I just want to say hi, make sure you're okay, and if you need anything, I'm in town, so I can do it for you. I wish I would have set a chair down and just talked his ear off.
He got nowhere to go.
Yeah, he got nowhere to go. You know, I had all these questions in my head. I was 8 years old, and I saw this. It was a true story.
It's the old school radio promotion guys that used to wait until the executives went into the bathroom, into the shitter, and then they'd play the record on a 45. They, you got to listen to the record now. You could have done that with Vince, just pulled the chair up and just chatted his ear off, right? I'm sure he hated the fact that you saw him in that condition.
Probably.
I remember when he tore his quads, they made us clear the hallways when they took him out on the stretcher.
Yep.
Vince didn't want anybody to see him that way, you know?
Mm.
So when you came back to coach, I assume that you left the WWE for a while. Did you stay in the business, or what were you still doing before you came back to coach in FCW?
My first release was in 2007. And immediately started independent wrestling, and I don't think I realized how much independent wrestling is out there.
Right.
Because then all of a sudden I was on fire again. I was because remember we saw each other in the airport that one time, and you were going this way and I was going that way, you know. And I was working at least every Friday and Saturday, if not a Thursday and a Sunday also.
Yeah.
And then I started coaching at OVW.
Just before you said it's funny because you took the name Eugene and just called yourself you with a Eugene. How did you get away with that?
I don't know. I think they were just being nice because
It's like almost like why bother, right? Yeah. And another thing that was fun. I'm sure you might have heard this, but I don't know if you have that. Brian Gewirtz took like 3 or 4 months off of Raw to write a script.
Oh yeah.
And the whole script was about you.
Yep.
Tell us about that.
I think one of the reasons that Eugene did so well is because Brian Gewirtz could write for me. Yeah, and he liked it. And he took that time off and he wrote this big script and he comes to me and he goes, we've made it, we're going to make a movie, we're going to put you in a movie. I'm like, holy cow. And he's telling me about all this capers that are going to go on about, you know, Eugene trying to get into the wrestling business, and at one point we're going to have you wrestle a bear. A bear? Yeah, what are you going to do? He goes, well, we'll just put somebody in a suit. I'm like, no, we got to get one of them Hollywood bears. And the only bear at the time was the one that was in semi-pro, and he ended up killing his trainer, so maybe it's a good thing. But the movie didn't work out, but then they slipped Big Show in that role.
Really?
Knucklehead.
That was for you?
I believe so.
Or at least an offshoot.
Yeah, like everything I've seen is like that stuff that they had told me was going to be in the movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, because I know Brian was putting a lot of time into that.
Yeah.
Because it was going to be a WWE film. Yeah.
Yeah.
That might have been right around the time when you had had to take the vacation or something like that. Gotcha. You know, it's interesting when you're talking about independent wrestling, because you had never really done that, because you had started in Louisville and just stayed in there. So how was it for you kind of coming off that WWE TV? You're pretty hot, right?
Yeah, it was good. I mean, it was good. I was literally, my phone was ringing off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to coaching at OVW, and then I was wrestling every weekend. So, I mean, and then I got rehired in 2009. WWE was in Louisville, and just go over there and get my face shown. And Johnny pulls me in. Oh, we want you to come in and be a carpenter, was the term he used. And I'd never heard it before. But it was like a guy that maybe not on TV, but just is wrestling live events and coaching.
Like a player coach sort of thing.
Yeah, okay, that's cool. And so that was in.
I remember that.
Yeah. And then I came back, and apparently they'd see me 2 months earlier, and I must have gotten. Either I got so much into bad shape, or. The mind was turned, but they were like, we're not selling fat old Eugene. You're fired.
Jeez.
That's when they brought me to Calgary, and I wrestled the Calgary kid, who was Miz under the mask.
Wow.
Yeah. I wasn't scheduled to be on the road, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, hey, can you come to Calgary? Yeah, contract on a pole match. Yeah.
I knew it was coming. It's one of those things, right, brother? It's like you always got to be waiting. You never know who's going to get the call.
I don't know. I never felt Eugene was supposed to be a body guy. At the time, I wasn't in the best shape. I could have been in better shape. But I don't know.
Interesting ups and downs with WWE for sure, right?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. When you were coaching there in 2009, who was in the system that's doing really well now? Is it like Sheamus and those guys?
When I was a coach, it was 2012, 2013.
Gotcha.
But Chad Gable was there. He was in my class. Braun Strowman was there. Sasha and Charlotte and all the girls were there. Kevin Steen had just got there. And
so how are you coaching these guys because the NXT will bring in these, like a guy like Kevin Steen, for example, who's been main event on the indies for years, and they kind of bring him into a class system. What are you teaching him that he doesn't already know? And not just him, but just for an example.
He came like right at the end of my time there. But a lot of time I was the first guy. Like if they bring somebody in, let's say they have no talent, or even if they did, they would put them in my class first, and that was their time to get acclimated around. And if I need to show them the bumps and the running the ropes and just kind of, you know, the basics of the stuff, and then they would move to like Norman was a coach and
Brookside and those guys.
And they, like everybody, each coach had a skill or like a level of one, level two, level three. And then they would switch us off too, so it wasn't always the same stuff that we were.
I would think they would want to have you teach guys about character too.
Yeah. That was a thing when I was coming in that they talked about, but it really wasn't ever fleshed out.
Let's just talk a little bit more about Eugene as a character, because it really, when you were in the ring, because a lot of times, like for example, like Val Venus, he was great character, but then when the match started, he would lose what made him a character.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously you can't, you know, swing your dick around or whatever, but how would you stay Eugene in the match?
I don't know. You know that the Drew Carey documentary recently where he talked about being Andy Kaufman?
Drew Carey?
No, I'm sorry, Jim Carrey.
Jim Carrey. Yeah.
And he said that it just came out of him.
Right.
That's what it was like. Like I feel like today that I cannot do it as well as I did then.
Right.
Because it was just a time period. It was just a feeling. And I just, especially when it was in the live crowd, and you could just immerse yourself in the joy of what was going on.
Hmm. Did you ever meet people who thought that you were real?
Most of them. Like when they first brought in all those the Diva Search girls, like they had no clue, you know. And then there's Victoria going, "Oh, that's my coach. Hey, Eugene."
So when you went and did press, would you have to be in character?
Oh, always.
Because that's how you met your wife.
Yeah, always.
She's sitting beside us right now, and you met her. What did you think of him when he came into the studio?
Yeah, he came in with William Regal, and they were both in character. And I'm just kind of like, okay. It was just really interesting. And then I ended up going to the show that night. The video?
Yeah, the end of the commercial, because we did your commercial.
Oh, yeah. So I hosted a TV show, and we were doing a promo, and they were standing on the side of me. And then later, the producer, like, called me into the editing suite, and she's like, come look at this. And so, like, right before Nick, Eugene, whatever, like, leaned back and, like, did the one up and down behind me.
Her backside, you know, like, man, let's see what... Yeah, okay, not
I'm
bad.
I'm like, okay. Yeah, but then when I went to the show, he had his hair all slicked back in
before
a ponytail.
That now, after we did her TV show first, and then we did like five or six radio spots, and every radio was on. I wasn't talking about the show. I was talking about, I just met Stephanie from Fox, and I want her to take me to Chuck E. Cheese. And Regal be like, calm down, Eugene. We have to talk about the show. And I was going on, I went on every radio station and talked about her. And then we had asked her to come to the show, and she came.
Yeah, and everybody was calling me and saying stuff, and I'm just like, oh my God, I have no clue what's happening. But I went to the show that night, And it was. He did. He put on Axe body spray, had his hair all slicked back, was in dress clothes. And I'm just like, what in the world? Completely different person. So I was fooled at first. I really believed he was the character because he was so good at it. Yeah.
Anywhere else in the world, it's, oh, there's Eugene and Mrs. Eugene. But in this city, it's, oh, there's Stephanie and her husband.
Right, yeah. I do like the addition of the Axe body spray. Talk about Regal for a bit. Did you do a lot of stuff with him?
Yeah, well, I rode with him. When I first started, you know, as Eugene, we rode together. It was he and I and Tajiri.
Wow, yeah, what a motley crew that is.
It was a good crew. Tajiri never spoke. Every now and then he'd get on the phone and speak Japanese, but he'd always say like one thing as we're pulling the parking lot, you know, and it was always something that popped the car. And I remember one time Regal had got a, I think we were at a Cracker Barrel and they got a harmonica, and he just wanted to get it just to bug Tajiri, so he played it, you know, nonstop for all this trip. The next morning we get up, Tajiri and I are waiting for him. Tajiri reaches up and grabs that harmonica. And then Regal got sent to SmackDown, and then that's when I had my knee surgery and I was off for a couple months, 6 months. And then when I came back was when Cena had come to Raw. Hmm. So then it was Cena and Tajiri and I that rode together.
Didn't Cena for a while, and you might have been involved with this too, where it ended up, it wasn't just Tajiri, then Asai came in there, and then freaking Funaki was in there. He traveled all the Japanese guys.
Yeah, that was before I was with him. But I think it was like six of them would try to get a hatchback or something and just cram everybody in. Dragon was in there too, I think.
Yeah, all
of them.
Who were some of your favorite Eugene moments, like a la, you know, the general manager, bouncy house? Was there other things like that that you did?
I don't know. It's kind of tough to say. I was a general manager in Winnipeg. I was in the ring with The Rock. I was on WrestleMania with Hulk Hogan. I even pinned Vince McMahon.
Oh, tell us that.
It was the DX against Vince and Shane feud. Mm. And I don't remember how they lured me into the back and they put, dumped paint over my head, green paint. And then they put my head in the toilet. You know, and it was, what else they do to me there in Sioux City? It's beat up Eugene. Oh, and then I was in the ring, and I think it was Vince and Shane against Eugene. And they were just going to beat him up, and they were going to beat him. And it was Shawn Michaels to go, Eugene should win if you guys are doing all that stuff to him. Mm-hmm. So, okay, yeah. So then at the very end, I just rolled up Vince, 1, 2, 3. And then I was out, and then all of a sudden he was, oh, my God. You know, DX came out, I think, right before that. They came out and diverted the attention, and then I got the schoolboy win. So.
And Vince, the worst wrestler ever. He probably even screwed up the schoolboy.
It was fantastic.
Let's talk a little bit about, as we start to wind down here, about, what's it called? Midwest
All-Pro Wrestling.
All-Pro Wrestling.
Yes.
So when you get these guys in off the street and as a coach, you know, and obviously you have to try and train everybody because you need as many bodies as possible. How is it for you training-wise? Do you have a set kind of list of, you know, exercises and rules and plans that you have over a month? What do you do when someone shows up and says, I want to be a wrestler?
Yeah, our classes are normally Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday evenings. And when somebody comes in to start, you know, I want to get their cardio up and I want to get their core strong and I want them to have a good basics and bumping. And then there's general list of moves that I have that I feel like everybody should be able to do and take. And we just kind of work on that.
Like what?
I take an elbow off the ropes, take a hip toss, take a body slam, you know, just the basics. And then at that time, like, I kind of, you know, assess their strengths and weaknesses. And at the same time, so what do you think you want to do? What's your character going to be? And then we'll do like some promos in the training center. And I'm trying to accentuate their strengths and limit their weaknesses and limit them being unsafe.
Right.
You know, keep it simple, keep a hold on him, and just, you know, work slow.
Mm-hmm. Are some of your guys like obviously you have your stars, your main event guys, mm-hmm. and what constitutes, like, how are you deciding where to put these guys? Like, what stands out to you to say this guy's in my main event?
I mean, just the way the crowd reacts to them, mm-hmm. you know, most of the time. The guys that have put in time and they got out there and they got themselves over, and then I just try to pair him up, you know, he could work with him. And with the COVID, we kind of weren't running as consistently, but for a while there, we were doing good. Last July, a coach came down and wrestled me in a Sioux Falls street fight.
No.
Yeah.
That's great.
For his charity, the heart chair, something like that. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah. So do you bring in guys like that once in a while?
Yeah, I brought in a ton. Carlito, Master, Bischoff came in for me.
Really?
I was on his original podcast, maybe not the one he has now, but and he was like, oh, it's so great to see you. I'm like, well, you could come in and hit the wrestling. And he goes, okay, I'll do it for free, and you just give a donation to charity. So we've given, much like you helped us out with Feeding South Dakota. when Bischoff came in.
So are you doing Eugene when this these guys come in, or is it Nick Timmons?
It's kind of – it also have to be the guy that goes, I take the tickets.
Right.
And I kind of – we my wife and I open up the show. So in the ring, it's a little Eugene, but other times it's, you know, head of the company.
Now, do you have TV here?
No.
Okay.
No.
Is that something you would want to try and get local? Is that even a thing anymore, local TV?
It is, but I don't know. I assume it would be a strength, but –
You like it better just doing it?
No, I would love to have a TV show.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'd love to have a territory so that we could have TV in Aberdeen and up to Fargo and places like that. Just haven't put it all together yet.
Mm-hmm. So that's something that you'd want to do in the future.
I'm recording everything, and then I learned how to edit and do graphics, and I'll edit it up, and I've chopped it up and put it together like a TV show.
So many things that I'm sure you never even thought about when you decided to put together a promotion.
Nonstop.
And it's just you two guys? You have an assistant?
No,
you have
just us.
Just us. That's it.
Yeah. And then we go out and we find businesses that'll sponsor us and find new venues, as well as promote the school, promote the upcoming shows, go out and getting the shows.
That really is old school territory wrestling.
That's all I know how to do.
Yeah. That's right, huh? Talk about your four buds, or three buds. What's Rob doing now? What's Damager and what's Danny doing? Doug?
Rob is in New Albany, Indiana still, I believe, but he'd start doing some, not the bodybuilding, but the, I can't remember, but it's a bodybuilding, but it's a different class.
The CrossFit or something?
Yeah, but I think he got his pro card. I'm not sure, it might be bodybuilding, but it was the guys who wear the board shorts.
The physique
competitions. The physique class. Yeah. And he's doing real well at that.
He always had an awesome build.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, a couple years back, he was NWA champion.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, he stayed in the biz. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I saw the other day he might be accepting bookings, but I don't think he accepts that many bookings.
Gotcha.
Because he's focusing on his bodybuilding. Doug's in Indianapolis working. I'm not sure what he does. I mean, mm-hmm. I text him every now and then. But,
yeah.
Danny Basham is in Florida. I think outside, I can't remember. It's in Southern Florida, but I think he's either athletic director or a principal of a school. Married, he's got a couple kids.
Yeah, because like I said, you four guys are like the four all-stars down there.
Yeah.
You know, what was your when you talk about your favorite matches that you ever had, which one stand out for you?
Like Doug Basham and I, we Cornette wrote an entire hour TV show, and we were the entire thing. We did a 2 out of 3 falls match that went like 48 or 50 minutes, and then that was the entire show.
Wow.
At the time, Rip, like the graduation of the training was you in the ring, you're a babyface, you're a heel, 1 hour Broadway, go.
Really?
Yeah. And that was it. You had to know what to do.
That's how Rip would train guys.
Progress to get to that.
You know, of course.
And Doug and I were the first to do it in practice.
Hmm.
And then since then, like a lot of guys have done it. Some guys have gone 90 minutes, I think.
Jeez.
I
mean,
you know.
It surprises me that Rip doesn't have a little bit more presence in the business, because as a trainer, I always heard he was excellent.
Yeah, he is. He's really good. I mean, he's a brain, and he taught me how to work in front of a live crowd, and just how to over pantomime and just work the crowd. I don't know if maybe he opens his mouth in an unpolitical way that gets him.
He's always on that Twitter machine too.
Yeah.
I remember he used to make lemonade out of lemons and sugar and water and like free lemonade, right? What a business. Last question for you. What was your favorite Eugene match?
Probably one of the tag titles with Regal. I was in Indianapolis. My mom was there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Were you guys kind of an odd couple? What was the relationship between Regal and Eugene?
Yeah, just they Bischoff put Eugene with Regal, and Regal detested. And then Bischoff progressed to saying, okay, well, you're going to have to make him lose, so he leaves. And then Regal started to become hesitant. It was like the first time that the Regal character ever showed any, like, compassion for someone. And then he started to defend me. And when I did the angle with Hunter, he got beat up, I mean, blood bad, and they put him on the stretcher, the gurney, and rolled him down and rolled over, and he took all the heat. And
wow, that's right.
Yeah.
Talk about I forgot about the angle with Hunter, because that was a big deal, too.
Yeah. When Eugene started to get over, all of a sudden I saw a lot of the more veteran guys, hey, but we could do this,
Yes, of course.
Okay, and then the one who did was Hunter. He slipped right in there, because we started on highlight reel when I became an official or extended, where they said extended member of Evolution, honorary member of Evolution.
Yeah.
He signed 8x10 and gave me the shirt, and Regal's like, get away from him. And then they strung Eugene along for however long it was going on, you know, make fun of him, and then he'd come in, hey, buddy.
Right.
You know, why don't you do this? And, you know, getting Eugene to cause destruction or do stuff to screw out the baby faces until When was the final?
Did you kiss him?
No, they beat me up in, I think we were in Massachusetts. I got the color, and then all of a sudden, it was all in my eyes. I couldn't see. And I had to take RKO and Batista's thing, the bomb, and the pedigree, and then I rolled. And I got a kick to the face, and that shoot busted me open on the other side and gave me concussion.
Damn. So didn't you work with Hunter like at SummerSlam or something like that?
Yeah,
I remember that.
And then the next year I worked with Angle. Because when I got back from the knee injury, Angle was doing the angle challenge, three-minute angle challenge, and then Eugene came out, and I lasted the 3 minutes and won his gold medal. And he was really upset and chasing me. He had so many good ideas, like all these comedy ideas about he was going to do something like he broke his jaw, so he had a mouthpiece. And then he was going to have the airport and have the guy there with Eugene sign and the guy there with Kurt Angle sign, and I come out with the gold medal. Oh, you must be the gold medalist. Come with us. And there's Kurt Angle with the mouthpiece, and he can't talk like that. He's screaming. Oh, you must be Eugene. Come on.
And Kurt gets the limousine.
Put him in the short bus. Yeah. But they were building his heat for Cena, so he's like, no, just kill him. So he just beat the bejesus out of me for 7 weeks or 8 weeks, however long our angle was.
How was your match with Hunter at SummerSlam?
It was good. Well,
I forgot about that.
The match was good, but it was in Toronto.
Right, I remember, yeah.
And all of a sudden we go there, and Eugene was hated.
Really?
Hey, oh, boo, and they loved Hunter. And it was like the first time where I think I might have used, I don't know if I broke character, but I didn't know what to do. I just kept putting my face in the mat.
Wow.
You know, I looking back now, I should have started whining at them and really, but then that goes against kind of the dynamic of the leader of the match there.
I remember that because they always talk about Toronto being bizarre or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, they did not like Eugene.
Yeah.
What was the finish? Hunter beat you?
Yep.
Of course, right, yeah. Man, lots of great moments, though.
I want to tell you one thing. I remember 2003, I was still in OVW, and I got a Christmas card from Chris Jericho family, Pose on the Beach, and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. I had it up on my refrigerator. I still got it somewhere, but on my refrigerator for so long.
Oh, cool.
Now, I'm just an developmental guy, and I know we'd met, but it was like, you know, but you sent, you know, to me, like, oh, man, that was awesome.
Ah, cool, man. Well, I'm glad we got to see each other here.
Absolutely.
To get back in each other's Christmas card lists.
Yes.
Good luck with Midwestern.
Midwest All Pro Wrestling right here in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. MidwestAllPro.com.